Today on The Grave Talks, In Touch with the Dead, a conversation with Ryan Wethelmeyer. Communicating with the dead was always something that captivated the mind of Ryan Wethelmeyer. Eventually, Ryan decided that he felt it was time to try and explore that world and try communicating on his own. In short order, it was a success. From communicating with the dead at an abandoned high school to many other locations, Ryan began a journey of trying to understand how the dots connect within ourselves, enabling us to communicate with the other side, but also with the physical world and the tools that now exist. Today, we discuss how to be in touch with the dead with Ryan Wethelmeyer on The Grave Talks.
As a kid growing up, I wouldn't really say that I recognized it, but I did have an interest. I remember constantly getting books. I collected like the classic Goosebumps books and stuff like that. So I really enjoyed like the campfire ghost stories, so to speak. And then, but what really kind of cemented it for me was I was about to graduate high school when ghost hunters and ghost adventures really hit the air. And so I remember, you know, typical Friday night, a high schooler is usually out doing something. I was the one sitting at home watching Ghost Adventures at 9 o'clock at night. So a couple of years after, a couple of seasons in, I started getting Nick Groff's book and Zach Bagans' book. And what really made me want to go out and do this stuff was I had a solid interest in it, and I really enjoy both the paranormal aspects of a location and the historical aspect. So what really made me do it was basically the gist at the end of Nick's book. He basically says, if there's something that's a burning enough desire for you, a passion enough, just do it. And that was what really cemented it in for me, that I really want to go out and about and do this. And so I started looking around, and in my area at the time that I lived, there we were kind of the very tip-top of the Bible Belt, so it was, depending on the area you speak about it, kind of a taboo subject. So there weren't really a lot of opportunity, you know, groups to join up with. If there were, they weren't making it super public. But I did find a group that was about an hour away from me, and I joined up with them. And we it was a pretty large group, and we hit a couple of locations. And one was like a very public place that they just let us stay past hours, and they never killed the PA system music while we were there. It was actually like an old mill turned into a mall, so that was a bust. And then the more I dealt with this group, it turned into more like a everybody just kind of collaborate and hang out kind of thing instead of actually investigate, and that wasn't really for me. So that was when I decided, if I'm going to find anything what I'm looking for, I might as well start it myself. So that's how my business with Finding Phantoms came about. And I basically didn't have any kind of gear. I had like no plan, just that I had the brand and I didn't know where I wanted to go with it. So I started looking around. I published stuff on Facebook, Craigslist, every platform you could imagine, seeing if anybody was really interested in this and partnering up and doing this. And there was a guy about an hour away, an older retired guy that had an interest in it, and he wanted to take part. So it was coming to about the middle of winter time frame, and he didn't like to stick around Maryland for the winter, so he always would travel down the East Coast, down to Texas, and then out west. And so he was like, how about I, when I'm doing my trip out west, you come out and fly out to Vegas, I'll pick you up at Las Vegas Airport and we can hit places out west. So we made it a plan, and we I ended up flying out west, and we had a plan for hitting the first night was we went to Death Valley, California and hit Amargosa. And when we initiated with them, they were basically trying to make it sound like this super haunted place, which it might be. And they wanted a non-disclosure, so we couldn't release anything. So I ended up flying out there that day. We drove out there. We had one night stay there. And they had the whole place opened up to us, which it worked out because there was only maybe two other rooms booked for that night. And we investigated the whole hotel for, I don't know, probably 6 hours or so. And then we transitioned to the theater. And the building's beautiful. The room's very, it's a very unique interest or experience to stay in that room. And the theater was very interesting. The theater was all hand painted. Everything done there was all done by hand. And the end of the night, we basically had nothing happen. So it was a long night, but it was still an interesting experience to go see. And it got us into warmer climates. So I was happy about that. And then from there, we drove up to Goldfield. And we actually stayed a little bit outside of that town. And we actually stayed at the infamous Clown Motel. And when we were cruising through Goldfield, I wanted to see some of the sites there. And we walked into a shop, and it's basically a small town that the main road cutting through is a truck route. So the locals there, they know everybody. So they kind of know if you're not from around there. This shop we walked into, they knew that we weren't locals of the area. And we were telling them what we were there for and everything. Come to find out, they were key holders to the Historical Society. And so they were like, do you want to check out the high school behind us? Yeah, absolutely. So that just kind of fell into our laps. Couldn't have happened any better. So they took us through a daytime tour and gave us the key for it. And we got to check it out for the whole night. And that was when I would say, like, we had I had at least my first experiences. I flew out there with just, I think I had a spirit box, an SB7. Digital recorder, and I had a camera that the frame rate was so low, it was kind of notchy, so it was kind of not very good quality film. But we had an interaction with a little girl there that kept coming through the spirit box. I think we had a janitorial staff member come through. One of the most profound things I captured was, we were hearing this little girl through the spirit box, and we asked, is this the little girl? And we didn't hear it at the time and everything, but we didn't really get anything out of that. But upon review, clear EVP saying, I'm the school teacher. So that was really an awesome experience.
Let's pause there for a minute. And I do want to hear more of the story, but a lot to unpack there. Let's first establish. So when you went into the school, And you had your equipment that you had with you, was that in fact your real first experience having an encounter of any kind with anything was in that school?
It was, yeah.
Wow.
And it was, I remember being very much so on edge.
So you'd kind of struck out a few times before. The interest, the passion is there, but it's not as easy as seen on TV, obviously, where you show up anywhere and they pop out at you and you get EVPs anywhere you go.
Oh, absolutely.
So I guess my first question would be, after kind of having some of those experiences that just didn't, you know, they weren't very fruitful, they didn't produce a whole lot for you, what kind of kept you going? What was, did you still kind of feel, you know, I know this is going to take a long time. Were you discouraged? What was the driving force that kept you going to, I want to find out more, I'm not giving up on this?
The experience was rather interesting. Actually, at the end of everything, when we packed up that night and we had our one night stay at the Clown Motel, I was exhausted and the experiences kept coming. I remember that night. So the Clown Motel, obviously there's anybody that knows the history of it, there's a cemetery right on the edge of the property, parking lot there that had miners buried and stuff. And there was a mine collapse that killed a few people. That night I was sleeping and I was just exhausted. And I remember being awoken to the smell of, I don't want to say sulfur, but it was kind of like that very deep metallic-y smell that like your hands smell like after you handle rocks.
Yeah.
So to me, I was smelling that and I think I heard maybe a footstep or two, because the floor did creak in one particular place coming out of the bathroom towards the bed. And I remember all I said was, I'm only here one night. Just let me rest and I'll be out of your way. And I just fell right back asleep. But it was those experiences that especially when reviewing and we got that EVP about the school teacher, that I was like, okay, this isn't just something that's totally, you know, faked for TV. This is something that you can go out and have these real experiences. You can interact. And I feel, especially now that I've been doing it for several years, the more that you're seeking that, the more it's seeking you. And that there are quite a few places that these energies that are there, these entities, they have a story to tell. They do want to interact with people. It's just a matter of the right approach and that right setting of intention to go out and want to actually converse as if like you and I are doing now.
Tell me about that experience where you got the evidence at the school, the old high school. I'm assuming this is a high school that is no longer active.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's correct.
So in those type of environments, those are the best.
absolutely.
I mean, even if you're not ghost hunting, it's just fun. There was an old school that I drove by for many years when I lived in Wichita, and it was actually the school, the elementary school that the BTK, Dennis Rader killer, went to elementary school in, and it was abandoned.
Oh, wow.
And then one day I'm seeing there's like cranes there and they're starting to knock the thing down. And I thought, damn, I've always wanted to go through there. So I found out, because I don't do the trespassing thing, I did my research, found out who owns the place. And I said, can I just go in there and just take some pictures? I don't want to take anything. I just want to just take pictures just of what this place is. They said, yeah, just, you know, go to the crew. I'll let them know that you're going to come and just stay out of their way and just do what they tell you and, you know, just do it safely. So I did. So I'm literally in this school that the other side of it is being torn down as I'm in the building physically. And the other side is still classrooms, chalkboards up. There's desks. There's, you know, it's almost like they just left, you know, and there's the balance beam that has the carpet on it in the auditorium, and it's all just there. And I'm hearing the wrecking ball, and it's just it's haunting. It's hauntingly strange being in environments like that, because you're so almost expecting there to be kids and activity. It's same with malls. That sort of odd feeling when they're vacant. So you get into this place. What for you? When did you start to notice that this event, that this investigation was going different than everything you've experienced in the past? What were some of those first things in detail that were standing out to you that made you go, "We're getting something here. This is not just luck. There's something happening here."
It was different right from the start. It had a little bit of a different vibe to it. And I feel like looking back that the fact that we had that day tour, with the key holders, that whatever may be in that school, they're familiar with these people that have the key holders, and they're familiar with members of that historical society and the townspeople. And I think that with seeing us with those people, kind of gave them the okay of like, okay, these people aren't trespassing. They're fine. They're with people that we are familiar with. And I remember we had, like a folding out plastic kind of table right in the entryway. And we set up some stuff there just to kind of spread everything out that we had between the two of us. And I turned on the spirit box, and I can't remember what I asked. The episode, I actually produced a small episode about this place online. And I got basically an immediate response. And I remember it, and you can hear it if you're watching this episode, you can hear it in my voice. It startled me because I wasn't expecting a response immediately. And I even stepped back and I'm like, did you just say what? And I repeated what I thought I heard. And then that kind of threw me. And I went downstairs to another classroom. And this place is in a bit of disrepair. It's not funded by any kind of federal or state funding. It's whatever the Historical Society can do. A lot of members will do the repairs themselves. And so the roof's leaking. There's buckets everywhere. There's tarps in the ceiling of some areas. And I remember I was sitting in this classroom, and it's kind of getting dark and sunset. And I asked something, and I remember hearing a tarp move, and I kind of jumped a little bit like, whoa, I'm on edge about this. But then later, as I relaxed into the environment, there was more coming through the spirit box. And then we were getting, it kind of sounded like a little girl just kind of passing by, and she was kind of muffled. She wasn't very clear. So we were trying to understand what she was saying. But I think one of the most surreal moments wasn't even paranormal at all. One of the most surreal moments for me in that place was, some of these classrooms still had the teacher's cursive chalk writing on the board from, you know, 40 years ago or whatever, however long it had been since the school had closed. But it was just crazy seeing, it was as if, other than the disrepairs in the room, it was like school's going to be returning to session tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. And that's haunting.
And I really,
yeah,
absolutely. It's just, I enjoyed that. And it was just, it's such, for me, a surreal and haunting but incredible experience to go into places like that that are physically stuck in time.
They are. I mean, they are like time capsules, especially if they've not been broken into and vandalized. You'll have those little nuggets of things, and it's just, it's amazing. It's like sometimes you'll see a news story where they end up finding an apartment that maybe someone, you know, just continued to rent forever. Or a family just kind of kept it going, or there was an infinite payment or something going on, but it turned out no one's lived in it for 40 years, and they go in and it's everything is just there. And these little places still exist, and it draws you in, whether there's ghosts there or not, it draws you in. What do you think it is? And this is just an opinion-based question, but when we think about schools, in most cases, especially if we're speaking, you know, historically far, far back, there, you know, we don't have a lot of stories of people dying in schools. It's something completely different if there is a tragedy or a shooting or the horrible things that we see in modern times. But I'm speaking more of, you know, places like this where, you know, they were in session till the 70s or maybe early 80s or whatnot. And, you know, they started back in the 1920s. There's all these years of people coming and going. Certainly students die in other causes, accidents and things of that nature. But what do you think it is about the school that sometimes brings these children back there when, you know, maybe they didn't die there? Maybe there's no record of anyone dying there. Why would they go back to a location like that? Just your opinion.
I think that, you know, it's human nature to really reflect upon the past. And it's kind of habitual that we don't really realize it. So I think that there's a lot of people that maybe they went to that school and they had a very vivid memory or experience that was a really good time for them with maybe a friend, or maybe they had a particular class or subject that they seriously enjoyed in school. That was the one thing that they looked forward to throughout their school day. And maybe they come back to revisit that maybe they pass away and their friend has also passed away that they knew in school. And so both of them go back just to have that day that they played, you know, in a gym class or something, or maybe they go back just to them, they can maybe replay it like a video and they can see how it was in their memory when they were there. And so they're reliving that experience, so to speak. So I think that maybe there's just a special connection that they just pay a revisit back to. And also they're with it being a school and having activity daily on a routine daily basis, and the structure being wood and being able to kind of have a little bit of memory to it. It's a good possibility that some of it is just kind of residual energy floating through those hallways.
Sure. And that's understandable to think that that something might be a residual type energy that's going on.
Yeah, I think that places like that are very strong with residual, any place that had a daily routine. There's another place that I had visited. I don't know if you've probably heard of Hillview Manor. That place is very active. There's a particular wing of it that if you just sit in a chair and just be quiet, it starts out all the time, just little things tinkering around. And then if you sit there long enough, you swear you're hearing, you know, like food trays going down to patient rooms and stuff like that, as if that daily routine is still going on.
Let me ask you this. And again, is this an opinion thing? And a lot of this is because obviously it's all conjecture. These are just everybody's thoughts. And that's what makes this so interesting. When we're talking about some sort of haunting in a school setting, and the residual thing makes a ton of sense. But when we're talking about something that seems to be more than that, something that seems to be intelligent, something that seems to be reactive almost to you or your questions or whatever you may be inciting with them, something like that, do you ever, the question would be, do ghosts have the ability to return at an age of their choosing? Meaning that if there's two kids that are conscious entities and they're returning to kind of relive this day over and over, is it required of them that they had passed at that point in time, at that age? Or could they have died at, you know, 74 in Paducah, Kentucky, and yet their school is in Portland, you know, Maine? I'm just throwing random things out there. Could they return to that school as their 8-year-old selves? Do ghosts have the ability to do that? Have you found any evidence of that in any of your research or experiences?
I believe that they can. So throughout my journey with being involved in the paranormal, one of the things and one of the most taboo subjects that interested me as well was the whole psychic side of things. And I have a friend that's very good at mediumship, and she's pretty on point with a lot of things. And so one of my first experiences, kind of a little bit of a tangent, was there was a local medium that had credibility to the point where, like, local law enforcement would bring her in for missing persons cases. And she would take clients. So I saw her, and she was hitting the nail on the head for this session that I had with her, first time I'd ever even been to a psychic. And at the end of everything, she told me that I'm very gifted as well. And back then I'm like, okay, yeah, whatever. But I kind of brushed it off. And the more that I've done this, the more that I've seen things, the more that, I mean, we've had family come over. I live with my girlfriend, so I've had her extended family in the house that I've never met them. And I'm describing this guy's grandmother to a T. And to me, it's kind of surreal because I'll pick up on things, on energies. I'll pick up on these feelings, or I'll see something in my mind's eye. And to me, it's just like, I don't think I'm going to be getting this anywhere right, but I've hit the nail on the head a lot myself. So I think the more I'm exposed to this stuff, the more I'm letting it into me. And then that being said, with this psychic that I saw, she talked about, I was very close to my mom's side of the family growing up. So my grandparents, they've both passed. And she was saying that my grandmother liked the way she looked when she was in her 30s. So she portrays herself as her 30s. And then later down the road with investigating, a place called Post Town Elementary School, very, very cool place, never disappoints. I was with my friend that's gifted as well. And upstairs, there's always like this running sound. You always hear footsteps. There's always, you walk down this hallway, you feel like kind of winded in a rush. And she was telling me there's two guys that they've passed away in their later years, like 70s, 80s, but they were best friends growing up. So they are both back at this school at the age they were at this school. And they're just constantly racing and playing tag and stuff up and down this hallway. And there's actually stuff that we've caught with EVPs. There's noises, there's actual manifestation caught on camera of this kind of a mist that expands out and goes down this one side of this hallway and then kind of dims down to like a pinpoint and goes through another wall. And so we've actually gotten a lot down this hallway that could be related to these two kids. So I think that when we want to, I think we can kind of look at whatever we want to throughout our past experiences. And then we can kind of portray ourselves how we want to be portrayed. So at a particular age or, you know, any kind of particular, if like you had an accident in later years and you may have lost a limb or something. Like, you can portray yourself as having that limb still if you want. But I guess it also depends on who you're talking to. So if you have a medium that's credible, that if somebody wants to speak to a past relative or ask questions about a deceased loved one, they may not know that person when they were in their younger years. So then they have to portray themselves as they would have known them.
To be recognized and understood as to who they are.
Right.
I see that. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you about, as you kind of started to discover some of your own abilities, and I get where you, the psychic, you know, told you, oh, you are have these strong abilities and you rolled your eyes because you've never really, I guess, recognized that previously. And you know, how would you in many cases? But when you had that, and then slowly later on, you started to kind of realize, you know, these little nuggets here, because, you know, you have a conversation with anybody, you have something, you'll get in your mind's eye a thought of, you know, your mind assigns information, and you'll kind of put characters together, and whether they're accurate or not, your mind's just trying to make sense of things. Is being psychic, sensitive, empathic, you know, all those various things to different degrees, is that something that maybe all of us have to a certain extent, but sometimes we make it more complicated than it really is? Is going back to just kind of the basics of when you have those thoughts or you have those feelings of, oh, I'm picturing, you know, someone talks about their Aunt Lucy and you're hearing their story. And then in your mind, you're kind of conjuring up this image of Aunt Lucy. And then it turns out, oh, my God, that's exactly what she looked like. But I was given no physical information about it. It's just what my mind conjured. Right in that process, that process of your mind putting those pieces together without the actual, you know, audible information or physical information to do it, is that something that many of us, you know, we already do, but we look over and we just assume that we're just making things up in our mind. But in reality, for some of us, it really is. We're really picking up on information that we're not getting through the traditional senses of, you know, audio and visuals and things of that nature.
I think we all do have that ability. I mean, if we take a look at, let's just say, several hundred years ago, you look at past civilizations, even ones that existed in different time frames, and then ones that existed in different parts of the world to where they would have had no communication back and forth. Today's world, we're all connected with every kind of device we think of. And honestly, I feel like that the way modern life is, it's kind of desensitizing or kind of shutting down parts of our brain that might be open to more spiritual things. But when you look at something long ago, these civilizations, look at their mythologies really closely, look at their stories, their religions, their belief systems. They all, to an extent, except for the, you know, having different names and representations, they're all at their core very, very similar. So back then, I feel like people were, you know, in the 1600s per se, more open than we are today, and even further back. I mean, if you look at how spiritual, like, Native Americans are, and how they are very much more living in that spiritual realm versus the physical realm, and everything revolves around that, and look at how powerful things can be with, like, you know, Indian burial grounds, sacred grounds, stuff like that. Those things are very powerful to them, and I think that the more that becomes a core belief for you, the more it can manifest yourself. So you can kind of open up to it more. And if you, a lot of people that don't believe in witchcraft, like good luck charms and stuff like that, or like, you know, if your football team's playing another team and you always wear your favorite hat and they win when you wear that, that's actually considered a ritual. So I think that belief system manifests for you. So everything that's in that universe is working around with you. And at our core elements as humans, we match elements that are the three basic elements out in the universe. We are a part of that. So I feel like everything really is interconnected and everybody has that ability, but it's a matter of most people probably don't recognize it. Or the people that do, they probably have an experience in their life that really kind of alters their course to be more open-minded to that sort of thing, and they start kind of exploring, and the extent of their openness and ability goes to the extent of how far they're willing to kind of delve into that side of things.
Do you think that society as a whole, someone who's not in touch with those things, have we just become such a world that's so out of touch with ourselves, you know, intimately? Like we're always seeking the latest thing to make us happy, to distract us, to, you know, Netflix, to binge on, to this or that. But we're not seeking out ways to be in touch with who we are or what we are, or what we want, or our feelings, our emotions. We're always kind of filling those gaps with essentially junk food for the mind. And the more that our society becomes that sort of a world, has that made an impact on us being able to not only be in touch with just common sense life, but then also the spiritual end of things?
I think we are kind of losing touch. There's so much. So the way I see it, you have the physical world and then the spiritual world. So we're living in a 3D space. The spiritual world is more of a 4D or 5D space. And I think that the more that's in our physical world, the more we get distracted with that. And it kind of gives us tunnel vision in a way. So we're more obsessed with, you know, the latest thing to satisfy the ego, the latest thing to keep us happy. But that's just on a physical level. That's just the ego speaking, the mind speaking. Mm-hmm. A lot of people that are in this, they go through a very difficult time. That's basically like the dark night of the soul, so to speak. And I had one myself, and it's a very difficult process to go through. You go through a point where you're trying to comprehend the things that you're learning versus what you already know. And the mind has a hard time wrapping around it because it's not stuff that the ego recognizes, but it's stuff that like the heart and the soul side recognize. So you learn to shift your senses really and your way of thinking from a mindset to more like thinking from like the heart and going with that intuition and going. I mean, how many times have it happens to everybody? They have that so-called gut feeling about something, they ignore it, and then later on, like, oh, I should have went with my gut feeling on that. That is more or less that 5D space coming in, tapping you on the shoulder, and giving you that intuition to go a certain direction, take a certain exit, do a certain thing, talk to a certain person. And we, as humans, are not meant to be on this earth to be miserable. And a lot of people, you know, they have a daily routine. They're unhappy in their 9-to-5 job. There might be a problem in the family that's causing them grief. We are meant to be creators of our own space, our own world. And I think our experiences are relative to our belief system. So if you get up in the morning and you are like, I'm going to have a good day, and you're dead set on that mindset, that's what your experience is going to be. And the kind of evidence to, so to speak, to that is there's a lot of times, how many times have you thought, you know, I really should get in touch with this old friend of mine or something. And within that day, or maybe the next day, they call. And then another thing is, if you're having a bad day, you turn on the radio and it's all songs about, you know, sad songs or stuff about a bad day. Your mindset and emotional, we are electromagnetic beings, and we are capable of being a beacon to that energy. So your mindset really can impact your physical 3D space.
That's going to wrap up the first part of our conversation with Ryan. In part two, how is it that sometimes people can communicate without words or actions, even if they are so many miles apart? How has Ryan been able to improve on his ability to connect with the dead? Ryan believes that the more one seeks spirits, the more they seek us. Why is that? And what drew Ryan into investigating the infamous haunted Hinsdale House? And what secrets has he discovered about it? All of that and more in part two of our conversation. To hear it, become a gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our program. You can sign up to be one on our website at thegravetalks.com. Click become a gravekeeper, or through Patreon, patreon.com/thegravetalks. $5 a month gets you access to all of our interviews, hundreds of them to binge away on. Advanced episodes of the show released to you weeks, if not months, before the general public, and it's all commercial free. So check it out, patreon.com/thegravetalks, to support us and keep us on the air. We cannot do the show without you. Until next time, for all of us at The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening. Thank you.